Hi everyone, I'm Josh Veal, and welcome to the best podcast ever, the Diecast, where we talk all about really tiny metal cars and figure out why the fuck they're called diecast cars. Joining me today is Seamus.
Is that really what the show's about? I had no idea.
That's what they tell me. Chris?
I was under the impression that it was about the power word death.
I don't even know how to respond to that. Rutskarn, what do you think?
I am impressed that Chris has pulled out the Dungeons & Dragons reference.
And also here is Jarenth.
We've been here for hours. Please send help.
That is unfortunately not an exaggeration.
This is the podcast that refused to get started.
1 hour since you guys sat down and said, man, I wish Josh was here and not delaying everything.
Okay, so here's quick behind the scenes, people. We have about 45 minutes of talking about technical difficulties, and then Seamus' fire alarm went off, and then I wanted tacos, and then Josh and I had to fight for the tacos, and he's dead now, which is why this is taking so long to get started. Josh?
Well, you know, I'm a ghost now, so that's actually working out pretty well for me. So, this is ostensibly a podcast about video games, so maybe we should talk about that. Seamus, what have you been playing in the past week?
This week I have been basically playing a big nothing. I had a lot of writing done, I had a 3-day marathon migraine, sucked up all my video game time, so I have nothing to report. No happy fun time for Seamus this week.
That sounds fun. What about you, Chris?
Or no.
I discovered Tuesday Mornings, which is a crazy cheap damaged goods selling, like it fell off the truck and we sell it for crazy cheap store. And because of that, I was able to pick up DJ Hero for $10. And I've been making my way through that most of this week.
I didn't even know there were any copies of that left in existence.
I didn't actually know if they made any copies or if they just shipped out a bunch of boxes and then when you opened them they said, sorry, yeah.
No, it's good. I like it. It's different than Guitar Hero, yet very similar. You sort of get into that sort of rhythm of just sort of seeing the notes and you stop seeing the game as it's played and you just start reacting to the images on screen. But it's different enough than Guitar Hero that it feels really, really fresh, especially since, you know, I haven't played Guitar Hero in something like a year and a half, 2 years. So it's really refreshing to sort of have this totally new set of mechanics to really mess with, especially because it requires two hands. Like, Guitar Hero required two hands, but one of those hands was just doing up, down, up, down, up, down to the rhythm of the song. This actually requires two hands actively doing lots of different things, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, that's what I heard. I heard absolutely everyone who reviewed it said it was a pretty good game. They had some interesting ideas. It was never going to sell.
No, and it didn't. And that's why I got it for $10.
It also hit right towards like that last year of rhythm games where the apocalypse just hit and everything died.
Yeah, where we had peripheral fatigue. Everyone had like 5 plastic guitars. I've actually played some DJ Hero, which I think is the same thing, in a store once, and it was really fun, and I was never going to buy it, because where would you put a large plastic DJ booth that you use for one game? The answer is nowhere. Or the trash bin.
See, I want a setup that... You first, Chris.
I was just going to say, the good news is that I won't play just one game with it, because I also went to EB this afternoon, or 2 days ago, or whenever I went to EB, and picked up Guitar or DJ Hero 2 for $3 because they happen to have a copy of that. So I picked up the entire DJ Hero saga less than $15.
I guess actually I was about to ask like
epic
how did they
DJ Hero duology?
I was about to ask how did they afford to make another DJ Hero, but I guess actually if you consider that they already had all the infrastructure in place and all they needed to do was release more songs, the question was really how could they afford not to do another DJ Hero to sell the same game again to the people who already bought the plastic shit?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was Activision, right? They were all about just sequel after sequel after sequel of these things.
The real question is, can you play other games with the controller? And is it fun?
Other games with that controller?
Yes.
No.
Can you steer Ezio around by moving the disc?
Well, it does have a D-pad and the face buttons. So if there's any game like, I don't know, a fighting game that uses just the D-pad and face buttons, you could use the D-pad and face buttons on the DJ controller. I don't think you can use the DJ controller itself to DJ control anything.
It's like a completely new control bit?
Well, I mean, it's got
a remap of the existing controller?
It's got, like, A and B, and I think Y are mapped to the three buttons on the actual disc that you rotate, the record that you rotate. But rotating the record is itself some sort of specialty input, the same way that lifting the guitar was some sort of specialty input. And while it can read that, it is not anything mapped to a core Xbox controller input. You can't just, like, spin a disc and then, like, load up a video game. That it won't work that way.
That is too bad.
What about you, Jarenth? Have you been playing anything?
I have been playing a bunch of smaller games. I've played some of Monster Loves You, which is sort of a choose-your-own-adventure book game by... What were they called again? Dejoban, I think?
Oh, wow. Dejoban is another game.
I've played some... I think they've had this one out for a little while now. But it might not be Dejoban. It was one of the smaller developers, and it is very much up their alley because it is a game in which you control a monster who lives in a world where monsters and humans coexist, and you just basically choose. It's a choose-your-own-adventure book. You get a bunch of adventures, and you pick a bunch of options, and then at the end you get a little story that tells you that the monsters and the humans now coexist, or the humans have enslaved all the monsters, or you died because you ripped your own heart out. That sort of thing. Each game takes about an hour if you click through it.
Wait, what?
And it's just really cutesy and small. Yeah, that's one of the options that I stumbled upon. I've also played some Starseed Pilgrim, which I know Chris talked about earlier. I don't really have anything to say about that because I don't get it. I've tried playing it, and I have an idea of how it works, but the very small idea of how it works. It is a very weird game. And I've played some Game Dev Tycoon because that's cool. And some Reus. I'm not entirely sure how you're supposed to pronounce it.
Give us your best shot.
Well, I say Reus because it's a sort of a 2D god game in which you control a bunch of giants who terraform a planet and help the humans develop. The word is Reus, which is actually the Dutch word for giant, and it's a game by a Dutch game company where you control a bunch of giants. But initially I saw the name and I pronounced it Latinized, like Reus, like Deus, except with an R. And I'm still not sure what the correct pronunciation is. And I just talked about pronunciation for a whole minute. Maybe someone else should take the lead.
This is the best podcast ever. I think we should keep this going. Rutskar.
Oh, well, I've been playing with a toy, actually, for the most part. By which I mean I've been borrowing a webcam. It's the one we use during Anti-Paladin, the one that records in 1080p, and I've been having too much fun just recording random bullshit. On the other hand, I actually got it for semi-business reasons, which will become clear in the next podcast, I think. But as far as video games goes, the only one I've really been playing is Spec Ops The Line, which is a little too late to play it without being spoiled, but not completely spoiled. I managed to stay mostly away from the media. And it's everything...
I still haven't gotten around to playing it.
It is everything that everyone says it is. Try to learn as little about it as possible. It's great. It's, you know, it's very captivating and moving and has a lot to say about the genre of military shooters. And the gameplay is not that great, but, you know, it's not about the gameplay.
Well, God, it's like we don't actually play video games very much.
Yeah, what happened?
I'm graduating. I literally have a few more weeks left, and then I'm out of college.
I'm not going to be able to rescue us from this trend because I basically didn't play anything this week. I played a little bit of Civilization, played a little bit of Star Drive, started to pick up my Hitman Absolution playthrough that I stalled because a bunch of games came out and then I had a bunch of surgery, but not very much of anything. But I did, on opening night, go see Star Trek Into Darkness.
Everyone is told that movie's not very good.
Really? I actually liked it. I mean, it wasn't the best Star Trek movie ever, but I found it pretty good. I liked it better than the first Abrams reboot movie.
Really?
Well, the first movie was very much like hero's journey plus super bad villain that has no redeeming qualities, whereas this one was really interesting. The main villain, it's hard to talk about because it's actually a spoiler, but suffice it to say, Benedict Cumberbatch was awesome in that role, even though he was basically just playing a slightly more evil Sherlock. And it spent like the first...
That's a movie I need to make.
It spent like the first hour of the movie just developing characters without really touching on the main plot. That doesn't really pick up until the second act. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I mean, it's still very much like got those sort of dumb action movie trappings of the first Abrams reboot movie, but it's a little less dumb. It tries to say a bit more, and have a little bit less explosions. I mean, not that it's lacking in that department. So I thought it was a pretty cool movie. But,
has anyone else seen it? I don't think anyone else here has seen the film yet.
Yeah.
Nope. It's loud, yeah, here.
No.
How is it not out yet? It came out in, like, the UK, like, 3 days before it came out here.
As far as I'm aware, it's not out yet here.
And you live in the UK, right, Jared? That's where Dutch people are.
Close
from.
Enough.
Well,
no.
On the scale
Dutch
of the United
Holland.
States, it's close enough.
He could
enough.
Take a
he's
train
Polish.
There in... in a couple hours if he wanted to.
I could take a train to the UK really easily. I've done it before.
Could... board a galleon.
Ha ha!
The laugh sells that.
Yeah, so we are apparently the group of video game enthusiasts that say fuck video games and go watch movies and play with webcams. We're great.
Yeah, I played video games.
Yeah, this
with that in mind, let's give our opinion
this is also
on
like
all
our
of the video game news this
intro
week.
Ever.
It's great. We're meandering through this like some kind of drunk bum that has a better metaphor than I came up with. So, okay. Unfortunately, we do not have any bad SimCity news of the week. But, oh well, it's been like 2 months. I guess it has to end at some point.
Yes, at some point we have to come to the point where SimCity is no longer sucking conspicuously. We now reached a point where it's just a baseline sucking in the background.
Or nobody's playing it anymore.
We can use it to grade other games.
How much does that game suck? Well, about 0.6 SimCities.
How many SimCities is Mass Effect 4?
How many SimCities long is my room?
But we do have some strategy game somewhat related news, which is that Sid Meier, which Seamus likes to pronounce Meier for some
Sid
reason, in an interview with Games Industry, said that he didn't really want to do anything on Kickstarter, that he was actually glad to have a publisher to take up the slack and to support his work, and that the core gamer is sort of being devalued somewhat by, or at least that we're kind of forgetting about all of the people who really like AAA games when we go off on this craze like, oh, publishers are going to go extinct. And I think that's not an invalid point.
He does make the interesting point that Kickstarter has a lot of downsides too, and that the publisher-driven model has some upsides that we seem to be forgetting. And yeah, what you said, there is a point to that. Like what he says about being able to change the design later on, which is difficult if you've Kickstarted something. Imagine if you do a Kickstarter and you make $1 million, and then later on you say, no, wait, I've changed my mind, I want to do a different design. The backlash would be awful.
Well, it's not just the backlash. There's the nation, or the note nation, the notion of if you're running a Kickstarter and you have stretch goals, and your stretch goals are, with this, you know, with this extra $25,000, we're going to have this mode. Well, we haven't built this mode. Who knows if this mode is something that works well with our core mechanics? Who knows if this mode is something that's really feasible, if it's something that we would even want to include in the game? Meyer's position is like, you know, having a publisher is great because someone else is responsible for all the financing. That's the publisher's deal. We just take the financing and build the best game we can, and when the publisher says we have to ship, we have to ship the game and just cut our losses where they are. And I mean, if you read the article, it's basically Meyer talking about wanting as much time to experiment design as possible, and the Kickstarter basically makes you do all of that upfront with no money, and then just collect a bunch of money just to implement a design idea that you've never even tested. And he's really worried that that's not a great model for someone like him who really likes to experiment with design, and the publisher model gives you much more time.
But this is so odd to me because, of course, a lot of these are the reasons that people go to Kickstarter. If you flip this, a lot of people are saying, oh man, I want a Kickstarter because I didn't want to put multiplayer in my game. Publisher makes me put stupid multiplayer in. I didn't want to ship the game yet. They make me ship the game. I didn't have the freedom to experiment with stuff and, you know, under them, well, because they just wanted me to turn out a sequel. So, it's almost like Sid is having the inverse of the not that I doubt him. I wonder if his games are kind of so different from the norm that publishers don't know how to micromanage him.
I don't know, something that's kind of bugged me about the idea that, oh, well, with Kickstarter, we're completely free of publisher restraints. We can do whatever we want. We don't have to ship early because of anything or do any of this other stuff that we don't want to do because we need customers or whatever, but that's not entirely true. I mean, it doesn't remove all of those constraints by funding it yourself through Kickstarter. It just shifts all of the burden to you. I mean, you cannot want to ship a game, but if you're out of money and you have a game that you think will do decently, you're probably going to ship that game.
And it depends. If you're a lone person, you know, developing, you might be able to, you know, take a part-time job, hold off, polish it some more. If you're running a team, then yeah, all bets are off. These are people trying to feed their families, and you can't just like, well, guys, I think the game would be way better if we waited two more months, and you just didn't take a paycheck, and your families just went hungry. That's not going to work.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, a small team might be able to absorb that if you know, they planned for it and they were all dedicated to it and they didn't have anyone depending on them. But I mean, in general, it's not, I mean, people, I mean, well, that this is basically the thing, is that games get shipped early when they go over time on their budgets and they don't have enough money left to actually keep people employed to finish the development cycle like they would. And that's not really something that's any different with Kickstarter. The difference is who is pushing to make the decision.
The thing that amused me about this news item was how it was reported by every single news site, which made you... It was the headline that made you think that when you click the article, it was just going to be Sid Meier saying, I don't understand what's up with all these people who use a Kickstarter. I mean, you know, just get a publisher to give you millions of dollars to make their video game and make the game, you know, with your own time. Just do whatever you want, you know? The publisher says they want something, they just tell you it's not right for the game. Man.
Right.
Yeah,
if everybody has that power when really they're... I mean, almost nobody has that power aside from Sid. And again, I think that's probably because nobody knows how to micromanage his project.
Well, and again, and Sid Meier's like, he knows that. And he acknowledges this, like, in the news article. But, of course, everybody's reporting it as Sid Meier thinks that Kickstarter is a load of shit and game developers should just find publishers. which isn't at all what he said. He just said that his style works with a publisher, and he doesn't want to have the obligations of working with Kickstarter.
Yeah, I mean, a good portion of this this interview is talking about his push into the mobile market, which is like barely connected to this stuff about Kickstarter. But you know, again, the thing that everyone takes away from this is Sid Meier said something bad about Kickstarter. Oh,
it's almost as if these shitty headlines get clicks and get ad revenue.
There's an interesting side story there. It's like, well, we always sneer at news sites for posting these provocative headlines, but, you know, the public clicks on that stuff. And they're just
I clicked on that.
It's a link in the Dicast document.
I clicked on that escapers. Because Seamus told me to click on it.
So really, it's
you didn't link
all
to
your
the
fault,
interview
Josh.
Itself because that's long and meandering.
Well, I mean, the article isn't just about. I mean, it's yes, it's not about Kickstarter and it's mostly about his mobile thing. But the reason Kickstarter came up was to contrast it to the AAA space, where he's complaining about the AAA space too. I mean, he's not saying publishers are necessarily better, but he's saying that having a publisher works for him because it means he's not worried about the money and he also gets to sort of focus on the design until it's right and then release, instead of making a bunch of promises about the design up front. But he also complains about the AAA space, because in the AAA space, you don't get to design a lot because so much of the emphasis is on making tons of content that's super polished and pretty, and you have multiplayer and single player, and that, you know, all of that doesn't let you really do a ton of upfront design work either.
And
he says that's a reality of it.
And a lot of the stuff he talks about that publishers do for you is stuff that's hard. You know, if you're a game designer, you're probably an artist or a programmer. You've probably got a few people that are artists and programmers. What you don't have are marketing people, are people to design, are people that know how to get you on the shelf at Walmart. That's actually really hard to do. You need business relationships. Walmart doesn't want to talk to little individuals. And all that stuff is exactly what the publisher does for you. And so it is pretty understandable. Like, Kickstarter doesn't make a lot of sense if you have that kind of access. So yeah, I can see where he's coming from with that. The stuff that he's talking about is really annoying. Handling payroll. Knowing how to handle all those little details about how to run a business. Business law is complicated, and if you're a programmer or an artist, you don't want to worry about that. And if you don't have a publisher over you, you have to. So yeah, it is really great to have a company over you doing all that. And even better if you're in Sid's place and that company is letting you do what you're good at.
Well, that's the other thing, is that a lot of this is someone who is a noted industry veteran who has a lot of cash both at his company and, you know, personally has a lot of cash, and as a result, and I don't mean C-A-C-H-E, not C-A-S-H, but, you know, he's got a lot of respect all over, and he can make the sort of thing where it's like, oh yeah, it's great to go with the publisher, I just told him I wanted to make a mobile game, and they were like, sure, go ahead, do it.
It does help that he basically has the golden touch. I mean, has he ever done a failure? Has he ever had a game fail? Like, his biggest quote unquote failure was probably his Facebook game, and that wasn't
Civilization Facebook game.
Yeah, and that's recent. And before that, just everything the man does is solid gold. So he probably does have a lot of freedom.
To be fair. Like, it says Sid Meier Civilization X, but he hasn't been involved in this series in any meaningful capacity in, like, the past 3 games.
Is this more of a Tom Clancy thing?
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, then what is he doing?
I mean, he still works for 2K.
He's working on the mobile game.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I meant, like, for Civ 5. Did he not work on that?
Well, no, he didn't work on
what,
Civ 5.
What, like, CEO
at all.
Of the company?
Designer. He was in charge, but he didn't, like, have a hand in any of the design at all. John Schaefer was the lead designer of Civ 5. I think he had some hand in the development of Civ 4. I'm not sure how much. But, I mean, I don't think, like, I think the last game he wrote code for and was the lead designer on was, like, Civ 2, which was, you know, like, 15 years ago. At the same time, he is basically the Will Wright of like, Civilization-style games, so...
Well, and he spent a lot of the late 90s and early 2000s remaking his DOS-era games, like Pirates and Colonization.
Yeah. And he did Alpha Centauri and Call to Power, actually.
Yeah, but Call to Power, that was another...
exists in this bizarre, like, limbo where it's not actually a Civilization game, except it is, and Sid Meier worked on it.
It's terrible. I hated Call to Power.
I actually never played it, so... I heard some people liked it. What a statement! I heard that some people liked it!
That was a weird time for Civ games, because you had Civilization 3 making a lot of mistakes without Sid Meier, and then you had Call to Power making a lot of mistakes with Sid Meier, and it's like... Until Sid Meier and Civilization reunited with Civ 4, it was this really awkward thing where neither team was getting it quite right.
So, Chris, couple days ago, I'm sitting around and a Steam window pops up and Chris starts spamming me with these turret emoticons. and then he started to weep about making bad decisions. Why don't you tell us what you did, Chris?
Okay, first of all, I didn't weep about it. You said someone has a history of making bad life choices, and you were talking
about... Yeah, but that's what you always say whenever you spend any money on this kind of stuff.
Well, I spent $10 on Steam. I basically dropped $10 into my Steam wallet with the intention of being able to talk more about the Steam trading card system. I managed to be gifted via a Steam friend the access into the beta. And I knew we were going to talk about it this week, so I wanted to be able to have a better perspective of it than this is a thing that's happening. So I dropped $10, and I bought two full sets of Team Fortress 2 trading cards, which is the thing Steam's doing now. You can trade, as you're playing certain Valve games, and also Don't Starve, the system will occasionally drop cards into your inventory, your Steam inventory, the way it used to drop, or still does drop, hats and other items into your TF2 account. And you can, if you get a complete set of these badges, which you can't do on your own, you have to trade to get the whole set, you can only ever get half of the set. Once you have the full set, you can craft all the trading cards into a badge, and the badge can be upgraded, you get experience for completing the badge, and every time you craft a badge you get a handful of goodies like a sentry emoticon. Basically you get coupons, emoticons, backgrounds for your Steam profile, as well as an upgraded badge, obviously, and 100 Steam XP, whatever they're going to end up calling experience for the Steam level, Steam grindy toy thing. And it's,
it should just be called experience.
Well, that's lazy. That's dumb.
They should call it XP points.
Or something. I don't know.
ATM points.
I wanted to be able to criticize it. I wanted to be able to criticize it more thoroughly just because I know I'm sort of on the record for not really liking this sort of gamification, and I still don't really like what Steam's doing, but messing with it has given me a better picture of what exactly they're doing. Even though the feature is basically called Steam Trading Cards, it's not really about the cards. As you're playing, the game drops cards, but doesn't really notify you of them as you get them. You just sort of quit the game, and in the upper right corner of Steam, there's a little notification that says, hey, you've got some new stuff in your inventory. Turns out it's some trading cards. The cards themselves are relatively small, low-resolution promo images that have been around since... I mean, like, it's using the original, you know, promo image for TF2 for some of the characters. There are lots of compression artifacts. They're not spending a lot of time making these cards themselves really worth collecting or really very good. And so I don't think the point is really about collecting these cards. The real point is the badges. They're basically trying to put a carrot on the end of the stick to get you to engage with their system and level up, basically. Level your Steam account up, get a bunch of coupons that you can spend more money on Steam, get a bunch of custom backgrounds that you could then trade for other missing cards so that you could, you know, grind again and keep leveling up. And really, it's basically a system for keeping you engaged with the Steam store and Steam marketplace, really is what it seems geared towards doing. You're going to be on the marketplace to either trade or buy cards, and you're going to be engaging with the Steam store to either buy things to trade or just use your coupons. So that seems to be the emphasis of
it. Yeah, I can't say I'm a particular fan of gamification in general either, so it kind of...
But it is hilarious that they're gamifying games. I mean, that's what they're doing. This is Yo Dog. I heard you like games. They are gamifying playing games.
So we put worse games in your games, so...
it's Gameception. But that's fine. I'm not offended by this. I don't think it's a terrible thing. It's an interesting thing to try. It's almost, to me, complaining about this feels a bit like complaining about Steam sales. It's almost like, well, darn it just makes me more engaged with the system. That's not fair. Not quite, but I don't feel like I have any room to complain because it really doesn't hurt anything. But it is interesting that they're doing this. And once again, I can't help but draw a comparison between this and Origin. Which just, this system keeps getting more, Steam keeps getting more engaging and more interconnected and bringing people in and trying to get people to think about their collection of games and to value their Steam collection as something beside, as to value Steam itself as something besides their game launcher. To like see this platform as their Facebook, something where they are invested, where they care about this program. It's not just a whole bunch of icons that you click on, play your video games. This is something that you are building or investing or gathering. It's something you've put time into. It's how you connect with your friends. And then you go and you just compare that to the absolute sterility of Origin and how the people who are making Origin really do seem to think of their program as a way to launch your games, and that's it. And not even do that particularly.
No, they look at it as a way to put DRM on all your games.
Yeah.
And also sell your games for much higher than they would be on Steam, and generally just suck.
In every possible way. So it's interesting that Steam is playing around with this. I mean, I have no idea if this will resonate with the public or not, but it's just interesting to... It's interesting to see the folks at Valve trying to do new things with this platform. And, like, where did this idea come... Well, it's obvious where the idea came from, but, like, what motivated them to... Like, what are they hoping to get out of this? What are they thinking this will sell more games, or this will create more engagement, or like, what's the end game of them for, you know, what do they see? How does this benefit them? What are they looking for here? I would love to know that, what they think will happen.
That was what I was wondering too.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward. They're keeping people engaged, which means you're not playing someone else's system. I mean, if every hour they can keep you grinding for a new trading card is another hour you're playing a Steam game and not some game from Good Old Games or a game from Origin or a game from, you know, this.
But how does that benefit
else, basically?
Them? Why would they care that you're playing a Steam game for another hour? You've already bought the game. They don't get paid by the hour. So what's
although
the benefit in making you get these silly cards?
Although keeping you... I mean, keeping Steam open, keeping Steam launches when my computer starts. Oh, I want to start Steam. Oh, where am I? Keep in mind, this is almost like... I mean, Steam alerts you to sales and things. And I never turn that notification off. I know it's a stupid advertisement, but I leave it on because sometimes the ads are really, really
good. It's a useful advertisement.
Yeah.
Wait,
and so keeping
Steam
people around
you of sales?
Yeah. When you launch
the
it,
fuck?
You can turn it off.
Oh,
you
that
turned it off. Yeah.
Only pops up after I finish playing a game for some reason.
Yeah, after you
yeah,
play a game
well.
Or when you launch Steam. sometimes other things trigger it. I think if Steam is already running when a big sale starts, like I'll get up in the morning, my computer's been on all night, and Steam will have that box pop up. Just, hey, the weekend sales have started, and it's like 10 pages of ridiculously cheap games. Again, keeping you engaged, maybe it means keeping Steam running, which means you'll see advertisements, which means you'll buy more games. That's a guess. I don't know.
Well, and then the entire marketplace is designed to keep you within the world of Steam. I mean, part of what you win are either things you can use socially, like profile updates and emoticons, which means you're engaging with other people, and if you know you're engaging with people on Steam, yay, Steam! If not, if you're using like coupons, well then coupons obviously send more money to Steam. You're either trading items, which are, you know, things you get in-game for... You're either trading items, which are things you get in-game, and if I, like, give you a free-to-play hat for Dota or something in exchange for a coupon or something else, you might go play Dota because it's free-to-play, you've never played it before, you got this fancy
hat
you want
to
try,
sense.
And now you want to do it. Or now you want to buy it, play it, whatever. And then also, if you do money, the money marketplace, Valve or whoever else gets a cut. When I put in $10, when I put in $10 to see how the system worked, I bought two packs of TF2 trading cards that other people had dropped, and then I paid like 50 cents a pop for, and Valve gets a like 10% a cut of that. So anyone who's investing cash directly into the system is also giving Valve a cut. I mean, this will generate money without any additional effort. People like grinding.
That's true.
And we're going to fight.
I just don't understand the leveling system.
You got to understand, you said no effort, but you got to understand how long it takes them to round up those JPEGs, Chris. They gotta, like, some of them even have to be resized. So, there's some man hours for you.
I just don't understand the leveling system, I suppose. All the collection and the cards I can almost get, and what you say about coupons is really clever. But I am now level 7 with 761 Steam experience, and I need 39 more experience to reach level 8. And why would I use
care?
Steam to launch games? I don't need a Steam level.
I mean, they've had that for forever.
I want more games.
I mean, I've been level 10 for like 3 years, and it's totally meaningless right now. I imagine, though,
okay, well,
like they're
going to
make it so
that
you can
see
other people's Steam levels, and they're probably going to add some kinds of like social perks for having a high level.
First of all, you get... if you do that, if you have the upgrade, if you're in the beta, pretty much everyone, you hover over their name and it gives you their level. Any of your friends list lists your friends in order of level. It's very much trying to set up a social currency and social hierarchy where the higher level guys are more visible and quote unquote cooler because they have a bigger number next to their name.
Me right off.
Well, that's sort of what it's doing. Is it's trying to establish this Steam level as a
oh
means.
Oh my God,
of social
you're level
currency.
12. You're cooler
Don't mess
than
with
I
that
am.
Guy. Don't mess with that guy. He's level 13.
No, there are levels.
Possibly social network with him.
And the other thing you
Not
get.
Not okay.
Just
he's a raid boss. He's supposed to be overleveled.
The other thing you get, just as a bone given to you for leveling up, is additional profile options. You can customize it in new ways. You get to feature new things as you level up and grind. And as you grind these badges that give you coupons that you could spend on Steam games, you're also leveling up your profile that you can use to feature, hey, all your achievements. You can feature 3 achievements. Now you can feature 10 achievements, that sort of thing, as you grind and level your profile up. Because that's really what you're leveling up. You know, you're not really leveling up anything, at least yet. You're just leveling up your profile page.
Well,
it's interesting. That's for sure.
Let's come up with a really good segue for me to move on to the next topic here. Any ideas?
Just
well, I have one, but I'm saving that.
Great. You guys are all great friends. I like that you all help me out whenever I need it.
Hey, look there in the sky. Is it the bird? Is it the plane? It's a Segway! Wow! Yeah! Woo!
You know, no, that
applause.
That would have worked better if it was no. It's a cease and desist order from Nintendo.
Yeah. So well,
damn it.
But it's not
I'm
a
gonna
cease
regret
and desist
that forever.
Order. It's they're gonna put ads all over your stuff. So Nintendo has entered a deal with YouTube where they've petitioned YouTube or something along those lines. Essentially, they've made it so that any video on YouTube that has footage from a Nintendo game will now have advertisements that that are played on it that send all the ad revenue to Nintendo.
Well, not any video with Nintendo properties. It should be clear that so far, at least, they've tended to focus on long form Let's Plays and other kinds of Let's Plays. But yeah.
But they're using the ID, the content ID system. So really, that thing is a crapshoot, and it can pick up anything.
And it's clear, like from the wording of this, that their intention is just basically anything. And I have mixed feelings about this because it's totally within their legal right to do this. I mean, there is, I don't think anyone could come up with a legal argument for why Nintendo shouldn't be allowed to do this. I mean, they made the stuff, they own the stuff, you're playing it and talking over it and then putting it on YouTube and making money off of it. That's not a very strong legal position for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, think of it. Okay, just to turn that around, imagine if Adobe said, oh, you made these images with Photoshop, well, then we get to make the money with it, not you. Just the idea that because you used our software to produce something, we should get all the proceeds from it is an outrageous assertion on its face.
There are tons of software that have non-commercial versions that are explicitly sold with the license that does not allow you to make money off of anything that you do in it. And
that does not really make it.
Also,
that does not make it.
That doesn't make
Nintendo's position any less ridiculous. Them acting like, you're just not allowed to make it. You as an LP producer produce nothing of value. The only reason people watch your show is to see footage of our game, therefore we get all the money.
Well, so they're not saying they're not saying, hey, you can't make videos like this at all.
Right, but they don't need, I mean, okay, think of it, if you are actually a, think of it this way, these notifications are not fun to get. They're always really scary legally sent to you. Hey, you have done something wrong and you have infringed on someone's copyright. From now on, there will be ads and there's nothing
you
can do. Don't contend.
Well, the big serious wording is when you dispute it. And it's like, if you submit a dispute and we find it against you, there're going to be bad consequences.
Right. It's very threatening that you should not. Don't struggle. Don't struggle. You'll only make it worse. These are not fun to get.
As far as I can tell, is totally bullshit because I've disputed about like 25 or 30 claims over the lifetime of the spoiler warning YouTube channel and never had any problems come back at all.
Right, but for people that don't know that, for people that just like upload videos of themselves playing video games and then they're going to start getting these nasty letters, and for people like imagine the people that do this for a living. People like Tobuscus or Two Best Friends or
Grumps.
I mean, they are not going to like, oh, Nintendo gets all our money this week? I guess that's fair. No, they're just not going to cover Nintendo games. They're not going to give up
As far as wisdom goes, this is not a smart decision on Nintendo's part. Everyone has already predicted exactly what's going to happen here, which is that people are just the people that have all the subscribers that have made a career out of doing this kind of stuff are not gonna play any Nintendo games, and thus Nintendo's gonna lose a great big amount of essentially free publicity because they want money from it. It's not a smart decision. But at the same time,
and really, what kind of money are we talking about here?
Do Let's Players make that much money? But it's they pay their own bills, and a few of them do quite well for themselves, but not all of them. And even the ones that are rich by our standards, that's a lot of money for them, but that's not a lot of money for Nintendo. And again, Nintendo actually won't get the money; just the videos won't get made.
Yeah. At the same time, I don't see how you can make an argument that, Nintendo is outside of their legal rights to do this.
Well, nobody's
making that argument.
Well,
I always hate that defense, though, because, of course, copyright law and fair use law is so hopelessly borked by now that you can defend any sort of asinine jackassery by saying, well, it's legal.
Well,
yeah, well...
I mean, I think it is legal for them to do this.
Something that I see as anywhere near shaky either. I mean, I can see arguments about whether or not Let's Plays are fair use, being a lot more nebulous, but fair use is explicitly not for profit.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. This all happens extrajudicially. Like, there is no such thing as... Oh, let me rewind. 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 40, 50, whatever. In the 60s, when Andy Warhol painted the stupid Campbell's soup, and there was dispute over whether or not that was copyright infringement, that went to court. And he argued fair use, and Campbell's argued, you can't just take our logo and make art with it. We own that. And eventually it was decreed to be fair use, but that was after the courts settled it. With the modern version of Let's Plays, the entire issue remains crazy nebulous because it will never go to court. There will never be a court case of, you know, Tobuscus versus Nintendo, where suddenly we have court case precedent that says, oh yeah, Let's Plays are totally protected speech and they're totally fair use, because what's going to happen is Nintendo's going to turn to YouTube and go, hey, take that crap down, or put our ads in front of it, and then YouTube's going to go, right away, sir, because they don't want to get sued under DMCA laws, and they have all sorts of backdoor deals with major content producers. So this problem will not go away. I mean, I don't even think fair use or legality enters into it, because really what you're seeing is a deal between two major companies, Google and Nintendo,
well, yeah,
to basically shut out Let's Plays. That's really what this amounts to.
And I'm much more interested in, like, what is Nintendo trying to do here? I mean, this is a lot of negative ill will. I mean, I reacted strongly to this. We make a Let's Play. We've never done a Nintendo game. I can't see any scenario where we would, but...
We also don't monetize it.
And we don't monetize, but still, this just offends me that a company would presume to behave this way when there's nothing for them to gain here. What are they after? It's just such a weird, weird move on my part.
Well,
just so aggressive and so pointlessly hostile and so little for them to gain.
Well, there might be the mistaken idea that Let's Plays impact sales in that people can view the game being played and then go, well, I don't have to play it anymore. I saw
and
how
we
happened. Know that's bullshit, but I get the idea that the people at Nintendo have a different view on the matter.
Which seems super silly to me for Nintendo-based games, because Nintendo games are usually about very clever gameplay mechanics.
Yeah.
Over,
when was,
like,
the last time somebody was like,
railroading story stuff?
Yeah, don't spoil the plot of the next Zelda game for me. I don't want to know what happens in a Zelda game or in a Mario game. What? Don't tell me who kidnaps the princess.
I mean, what kind of fulfillment
maybe it'll
do you
be
get
different
out of watching someone play Mario, unless it's like some kind of Nintendo hard Mario level where there's like no floor and someone's that is way better at Mario than you will ever be is playing through it.
Nintendo games
bizarre, but...
more than any other games are games that do not exist for the story and that cannot be spoiled. You can watch an entire Nintendo game and you are not going to be like, well, I don't need to play that now, I watched it. I mean, Nintendo games more than any other are there to be played.
My idea on this is that Nintendo has an extremely long history of being very, very sensitive about their public image and their public perception, and they
like worried about people cursing and making penis jokes over their game footage.
They very much like to own Nintendo as an idea and a brand, and they don't like, you know, I mean, how many like fan-made Pokemon games have been shut down that, you know, were totally free and and basically would never hurt anything that Nintendo did. I mean, how many of those have been shut down? How many fan-made Mario clones have been shut down? I mean, how long were they fighting that losing battle with ROMs and emulators?
That's true. I'd
Nintendo
forgotten all
been
about
like
that.
This for years and years and years. I mean, they have the whole... I mean, the whole reason that Nintendo is perceived as well, not just perceived, but the whole thing that they rescued the gaming industry from in 1985 was a bunch of bad quality stuff. They have the whole Nintendo seal of approval that they still do. That was a big thing for them. You know, they have this
brand
impression
control
about themselves that their brand has to have a certain quality to it, and they like to shut down anything that could possibly threaten that. And it has not worked out fantastically for them in terms of core fans' opinions, but that's how they've been doing it for years and years and years.
The end.
Seems that we have explored that topic fairly thoroughly.
Well, there's not a whole lot to talk about. It's just a weird situation. Yeah. And we all think that it's at least a very silly idea for them to do because of the negative backlash and because of the positive influence of Let's Plays on game sales. And Nintendo has a different idea on the matter. That's really it.
It doesn't really strongly affect us directly anyway because we were never going to do a Nintendo game, so...
Right. The only thing I worry about is if other companies follow suit. That
yeah,
could worry me if this becomes...
Well,
if this
a lot of companies have actually done the opposite in response
yeah.
to all the backlash about this.
Yeah, please. Oh, Nintendo
said,
doesn't
hey,
want videos?
You should do this.
Do our game. Cover our game in your video show, please. Talk about our game to millions of people.
I guess if there was anything else to note about this, it is that Notch recently tweeted things that were related to this, where he brought
up... Oh, yeah, that's right.
He brought up the fact that he was in a meeting with YouTube, and I don't know if they were meeting with him or he was meeting with them or whatever, but YouTube proposed to Mojang and to Notch that, you know, hey, we have software that can detect when people are playing Minecraft, and, you know, we could put ads in front of it and give you all the revenue from that. You know, we'll split it, whatever our split is. We'll take some, you take some, and, you know, they get to make their cutesy little videos, whatever. So I think it's important to note that this is something YouTube is pushing, not necessarily something that Nintendo agreed to it. Nintendo consigned to it, but this is something YouTube is pushing. I guess cracking down on video games as much as they have historically cracked down on.
I wonder if
and
this
music.
Is. I wonder if YouTube is just tired of hosting a 10 billion hours of free ad-free video every day, and they want some way to throw advertisements over this without getting their fingerprints on it. That's an interesting idea.
It must sting for them to see all those pristine, unadded videos. All the hypothetical money just going to waste.
Well,
especially
I mean,
since they're paying for the bandwidth.
Really, they're between a rock and a hard place because they don't want to just throw ads up on there without the consent of the content owners. Because if they do that, then they are making money off of infringement and not taking it down, and it gets real awkward.
Yeah.
So they can't just throw up ads like other places have. I know Blip has started officially. Every video, even if you don't want it to, will have ads, and that had some consequences to people that have really, really short episodes up on Blip. If you have a, you know, 10, 15, 30-second clip up on Blip, and suddenly it's preceded by a 45-second GameSpot ad, people were kind of complaining, oh, that sucks for my videos, but go to YouTube. So YouTube can't do that the way Blip has for a variety of reasons, both the kinds of videos that YouTube hosts and also just the way that YouTube does its advertisements is sort of a little different.
Yeah.
Well, what do you say we move on to the mailbag? Because that's basically all the news we have to talk about this week.
Let's do it.
Unfortunately, I only got two questions this week. So, and I'm caught up on all the old questions that we had, so we're
well,
going to
so
do some silly stuff.
Nobody is playing or thinking about games this week.
This is great. Neil from last week says, not a question per se, but just letting y'all know that if Chris ever shaves that beard down to a goatee, you'll have Gordon Freeman in your podcast.
No, we'd have Gabe Newell with a goatee is really closer to what we'd have, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Well, you need to grow your hair into a mullet.
It's closer than you think.
Do you wear glasses?
I do. I'm wearing them now. I normally wear contacts, but my contact subscription has lapsed, and I've been a combination of too lazy and too poor to go to the eye doctor.
What do you have, DRM on your...
You have to subscribe to contacts?
No, my prescription. Sorry, not my subscription. My prescription has lapsed.
It's like you get a monthly contacts. Contacts Monthly, the magazine all about putting glass in your eye. Let's see here. Let me get the other email up. This is actually three questions, so hey, maybe we can stretch it out a bit. Jonathan says, my name is Jonathan. Really. Long-time lurker, sporadic forum poster, under username Autocrat. I have a two-part question for Seamus. You mentioned a science fiction story you were working on. Did your experience with Kerbal Space Program change the way you think about spaceflight? And if so, did it influence your science fiction book in any way?
A little bit. I actually did not know how orbital mechanics worked. Now, it didn't affect... I'm very glad that... that I wasn't going for a serious book. The book I'm writing now is very much cheesy space opera. Like, and it's Star Wars level technology. How do the engines work? They just make the ship go. Shut up. Don't worry about it. It's all space
magic.
Writing
the other one you talked about with the hard science.
The hard science
this
one.
This whole time.
No. The hard science one is I got halfway through that book. Very interesting, but I had a massive case of just, I guess, writer's block. And so I just put, and that was called, what was it called? I had a working title, I think it was Fall from the Sky. And I just put that online, like, here, read it. And some people stumbled on it, like, oh, what's this? Or they had it saved in their links, and then they began reading
it. Yeah.
And then they got, you know, 80,000 words into this, and... It just stopped.
Just stopped.
A really painful point.
You're like,
so,
fuck. You were the worst.
So that's kind of evil. I should have giant red warning at the top. Warning, this is an unfinished book. But the next book I have is just so soft science that the Kerbal Space Program isn't going to change it very much. But that's good because Kerbal Space Program is incredibly educational with regard to how orbital mechanics work. It's amazing. If I ever do write another space travel book, if I ever go back to Fall from the Sky, I will definitely be taking things I learned from Kerbal and applying them to that story to make it more realistic. Because there is this simplistic view of, well, you just... You know, you want to go into space, you go up. And when you want to go back down, you go down. And no, when you want to land on a planet, you do not aim the nose of your craft at a planet and crank up the thrusters. When you want to land on a planet, you aim your ship in the opposite of the direction you are orbiting, and you begin a burn. And you do it opposite of the side where you want to land.
Did you actually think that you landed on a planet by accelerating towards it?
That's how I did it.
You make it sound like I had actually thought of it. I mean, if somebody had asked you, I'd say, well, I guess, you know, you're up, you want to go down, so you point the nose down and you thrust towards the planet. And technically that will get you down. You keep at that,
well,
you will
yeah,
get
you'll...
to the ground. But that is best way to do it.
You might just turn into dust particles in the stratosphere, but
sure. Detail. Sure, it's not the most efficient way, but yeah, Kerbal Space Program kind of opened up all this stuff and vocabulary to me. Kerbal Space Program might be the most educational, non-educational game I've ever played. really, really amazing. And yes, if I ever go back to Fall from the Sky, stuff from Kerbal will sneak into my book. Luckily, it's not going to impact the book I'm working on now, since that book is space magic.
Any ETA on that book, since, you know, you've been talking about how close you were to finishing it for, like, the past year?
I have no idea. I've been at 80% for a couple months now. I keep adding more material, but it's not moving me closer to the end. It's like, oh, it'd be cool if I talked about this, and here's another idea I want to put in. So I'm going kind of Neal Stephenson on it, where I'm just, like, packing all these interesting ideas in, which sounds bad, but really, I mean, what's the point of writing a book if you're not having fun writing it? So what the hell? I'm going to write what seems fun. Rather than, like, this book's an obligation and I must finish it, just work on what's fun and what's interesting, and it will get done eventually. That's my best book. That's how I wrote it. Free Radical. That is how I wrote that book, is I wrote what I thought was interesting on my own time, and it got done, and it was the best work I've done. The Witch Watch, I felt like I had this obligation to get it done because I'm writing a book now, and that's serious business. And I'd get writer's block, and instead of just, well, I'll go do something else, I'd feel this guilt that I'm not working on the book. And I think the whole attitude of, I have to finish my book, is actually poisonous to writing good books. And so I'm trying to take a relaxed view towards working on this book and keeping it fun.
I feel that way sometimes, but I feel like sometimes you kind of have to give yourself a kick in the ass, like, because, you know, inevitably there's the part of the project where your interest kind of starts petering out, you kind of start drifting away from it, and you kind of just got to go, like, okay, well, this is what I'm doing now, you know, I will come to a part again where this will be really interesting to me, but right now I kind of just need to do the writing, and that's how the story gets done.
So you actually consider Free Radical to be better than The Witch Watch? I would not have. It's interesting. I would
based
not have
on
that.
Yeah, based on feedback from people, it's no contest. People just have so many interesting things to say about Free Radical, and everybody says The Witch Watch is a fun adventure story. And really, I mean, that makes a lot. Looking at my approach to the two books, that makes
I'm
a lot of
to
sense.
Echo that.
Yeah. One I used to pack in a bunch of interesting ideas I had about AI and about how it should work and would work and might work. And the other one is a fun adventure story where I subverted a couple tropes that got on my nerve. So, yeah. And I think
so
that's reflected in the work.
A niche film festival film, and the other one is a summer blockbuster in the event that they get turned into movies.
Yeah, if they were turned into movies, my first book would be your real cerebral, thinky, not like Primer, but something in that space where this is not for everybody. And then the Witch Watch would definitely be your popcorn munching adventure time.
Starring Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, you're killing me.
Or Nicolas
really
Cage.
Shia LaBeouf wearing a wig.
I'd watch it.
The second part of his question, on the subject of science fiction, do you think there would be any market for a hard science fiction CRPG, like, say, something set in GURPS, Transhuman Space, or Eclipse Phase? I don't know what any of that is.
That's okay, I guess.
Sure. I don't know if I'd play it. But
the question about that is there a market for? There is no question with regards to tabletop RPGs where the answer to that is no.
Yeah, rule of thumb with just about anything you could come up with is yes, somewhere someone will buy that.
Well, I think especially with computer role-playing games, anything that's not medieval land, Americans doing British accents while dragons and elves and assassin cabals happen in the background would probably float pretty well.
And even what you just described would float fine.
Honestly, not a lot of CRPGs coming out that are just, you know, that scratch the itch of the CRPG player. It's almost getting to the part where it's like, to play a traditional Baldur's Gate-style CRPG, you get fed a bone about as often as survival horror enthusiasts, and it's about as satisfying.
And P.S. Would a one-off episode of Dark Souls ever be possible? Because nothing is better for the spoiler warning formula than heavy do-it-again stupid gameplay with
that,
extremely
that
minimalistic
greedy.
Plot and 90% combat. That's yep, that boring. That is completely incorrect, but I don't know. I mean, I would not be against it, but the thing with Dark Souls is that the PC port is absolute shit. So I've been kind of staying away from the PC version. So I would have to own it. and then, yeah, sure, maybe we could do it as a one-off episode and everything would be awful. And you would get to watch us suffer.
I don't think it would work as a one-off episode. I think it'd have to be like 1 week or 2 weeks worth, just to the point where we could see how bad things really get. Because I've played enough of both games to know... You play it at first, and you get through the tutorial, and the tutorial alone will take you an hour, but that only gives you a brief sampling of how mean the game is. You have to get into the game and redo the same 45 minutes of gameplay two or three times before you start realizing just how mean the game is.
Well, it would obviously be a clip show. We wouldn't show the whole extent of me getting killed repeatedly over and over again in 45-minute segments.
So to reference something Seamus is probably about to pull, the whole point of the game is deep hurting.
Yeah, the whole point, like, unless we have a timer showing how much game time we just lost. I mean, you know, it's one thing, a clip show is like, wow, you die often in this game. No. You don't necessarily die often, but when you do die, you lose a ton of progress and you've got to do a lot of stuff over again. Well, actually, it's both.
This actually sounds like a great game. I'm canceling the Tomb Raider season. We're going to do this instead. I'm going to the store page. I'm going to buy Dark Souls. Let's do it.
I dare you to do it.
I don't even have a 360 controller, which I've heard is absolutely necessary to play the game on the PC.
It is. It's necessary. I would recommend.
Well, actually, I have a 360.
I double dog dare you to do it.
Wireless. So.
Do it.
Well, that is about all we have time for this week, and also literally all that we have to say. Maybe we should actually start talking about metal cars.
I've run out of everything to say.
There are no more things to say. The world is out of words. We give up. We quit.
The next podcast will be nothing but Murloc noises.
I have nothing else to say.